Shire is a leading global specialty biopharmaceutical company with a focus on helping people with life-altering conditions to lead better lives. While Shire's portfolio of ADHD medicines helps patients diagnosed with ADHD, we recognize the need to provide additional support to them and their families. And that's why we at Shire value our local, regional, and international partnerships that are designed to develop and enhance programs to improve the understanding and awareness of ADHD. At Shire, people diagnosed with ADHD have our full attention. To learn more about Shire, visit www.shire.com.
To Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. Today is February the 8th in the year 2012. It's a Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our topic tonight is attention challenges, how ADHD and dyslexic overlap. With us in our virtual studio is Brock Eide and Fernette Eide. And we're going to get it right into the meat of our show in just a minute, but a few announcements. One, today is February the 8th, and at midnight we're closing down the opportunity to win a Found It membership. Have you ever lost your phone, wallet, or car keys? If you're like many people with ADHD, you tend to get ahead of yourself and accidentally leave important stuff behind. Found It can help. Found It will give you a unique ID number and ways to label the stuff you misplaced, like your camera, your laptop, your notebook, backpack, jacket, what have you. When somebody finds your stuff, they simply enter the information on the label in Found It's secure website, and you get notified instantly. Go to founditit.net to learn more. And go to facebook.com/attentiontalkradio, click on the advertisers and giveaway tag on the left side of the page, and you can enter to win your chance to win a premium 2-year Found It membership. And again, the deadline for entry tonight is midnight Eastern Standard Time. While you're there, just note if you go to facebook.com/attentiontalkradio, on that page you can access Attention Talk Radio, our archive episodes. You can see a list of upcoming shows. You can actually listen to our show live, and you can follow the threads and even make comments on our wall. So if you haven't already done so, do that. One note, if you go to the Facebook page and you go to the advertisers and giveaways tab, you can actually enter your email address in there, and we will actually send you our bi-monthly newsletter that lists all of our upcoming shows, and that's really good for the people who don't like go hunting for it. We'll just send it right to your inbox. For those that are interested, this year's CHAD conference is going to be in San Francisco on November 8th through the 12th. If to learn more information about that, go to chadd.org. And let's see, I think that's all the announcements we got. So let's get to the show. Again, with us tonight, we have Brock Eide and Fernette Eide. They're a husband and wife team. Both are medical doctors, have a thriving practice in addition to a busy lecture schedule and award-winning blog. They are authors of two books, The Dyslexic Advantage, which was released in 2011, and The Mislabeled Child, which was released in 2006. They also are active members in the International Dyslexic Association and Learning Disabilities Association, and they serve as board members for supporting educational needs of the gifted. They can be found on the web at dyslexicadvantage.com, which is one of the world's largest online communities where people can share their experiences and find information on gifted education and learning disabilities. The Eides live with their children in the greater Seattle area. And with that, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jeff, for having us.
Hi.
We're glad to be here.
I've been particularly excited about having this show. How this really kind of came about is Nancy Rady, who's a dear friend of mine, who's also the author of The Disorganized Mind, who, for anybody who's interested, I did a show with her on that book back in July of 2010. She's a dear friend of mine, and we were talking about dyslexia, particularly since I've got it myself, and she said, you've got to read this book. You've got to read it. And so, literally, I got off the phone, and I don't read a lot of books because reading's not necessarily the easiest thing for me, and I got it, and I got to tell you, it was. I'm glad she twisted my arm to do it, and it's kind of cool because I didn't realize until I got the book, but she had actually written a review, I guess, on the back cover of the book. So that's how this thing came about, and what I liked about the book, and what I think is so interesting in that there's some overlap here, particularly with my ADHD crowd. This book takes a look at dyslexia, but it takes a look at it and breaks it down with some specificity, which I always like, but it looks at all the aspects of at least that it covers in the books as two sides of a coin. Here's how it manifests one way, and here how it manifests another. So I guess to begin with that, let me just ask, what inspired you guys first to write the book?
Well, Jeff, it was really getting to know people like you and like Nancy, who's also a friend of ours. In our practice, we work with kids with all sorts of learning disorders, so not specifically dyslexia or attention deficit, but just kids who are having problems getting by in school. So we see kids with all different sorts of learning challenges. And one thing that became apparent to us after working with those kids and with their families, who we also work with very closely, is that there was just something different about kids with dyslexia and a lot of the kids with ADHD that was very hard to classify as a learning disorder simply. One thing that was really obvious to us is that a lot of these kids were extremely creative, that they came up with very interesting, unusual ways of looking at the world, and that they did a lot of things very, very well, not just things poorly. And when talking to their parents, who were very often successful, creative people in their own right, we found out that many of those parents had the same kinds of problems when they were young. And after working with hundreds of individuals and families like this, it became less and less coherent to us to think of this different way of processing information as simply a disability. And we wanted to look more carefully at the positive sides and the positive traits that are associated with these learning styles.
What's really good is you very much did that in the book, but you didn't deny on the other side some of the challenges, but the way you did it is the two sides of the coin, so that it's really kind of like a balance, and if you understand what you're dealing with, I think it puts you in a better position to manage it. And if you could talk, at the beginning of the book, you actually kind of talked about, on the front side, some of the challenges, particularly with language and symbolism, and you talked about the different types of, processes of learning. Can you speak to that for a second? Because I want to get into the as you put it, the mind concept that actually kind of breaks things down on both sides. But before we do that, can you just speak to that piece of it?
Yeah, I think that that the traditional things associated with dyslexia, a lot of the focus has been on phonological processing, phonological awareness, so the way that the brain handles the very small units of sound and language that are the basic building blocks of the language processing system. Other challenges that can go along with that are things like difficulties with working memory and difficulties with processing speed and rote memory. So when we started looking at the different kinds of traits that seem to go along with challenges in those areas, we found that very often there were flip side strengths that seemed to correlate very closely with a lot of the challenges. So, for example, kids that had slow processing and problems learning things by rote very often had very good problem-solving abilities and very good ways of using other aspects of memory to compensate for rote memory difficulties. Or kids that had problems with language retrieval and putting together long sentences very commonly had outstanding spatial abilities or verb or visual abilities. So we noticed these trade-offs. And in the book, we then went on to try to look at all the individuals that we had seen and to look at a lot of successful adult dyslexic individuals and try to break down the commonalities that lay behind their strengths. And when we did that, we came up with four basic categories, and those are the mind strengths that we talk about in the book.
And I want to kind of dig into that in depth in a second, but it's really one of my questions to you is that given the dyslexic brain, and let's say, it's wired a little differently, are the advantages or are they advantages that are developed over time as a result of having, as you said, using other aspects of memory? Or as I kind of imagine, if I lost my eyesight, then I'm not overwhelmed with my eyes and my ears, so as a result I've got to concentrate more with my ears and so I can hear more because I'm more focused. So in other words, do you think that some of this is just innate, or is some of it a result of because they struggle in some other areas, they have to focus and rely on other aspects of like memory or whatever that's up there that kind of helps result in the advantage?
You know, I think it's really both. You know, in some cases, it's as you say, where there's a challenge, and then you know, it's a way of going around it, another area, another pathway, really get strengthened. But also, we really see quite remarkable strengths that are present early on. And, you know, one example of that is with memory, because, you know, sometimes you can actually have a very weak rote memory for math facts, for instance, but often it's in the setting of very strong personal memory, memory for episodes experienced.
And we're going to get to that in some detail when we get into stuff, but before we do that real quickly, in the book, you started talking about a little bit like left brain, right brain a little bit to kind of frame this out, to kind of divide the sides a little bit. Can you speak to that for a second before we get into some of the other details?
Yeah, I think the original research that was done on this left brain, right brain issues by people like, you know, Roger Sperry and Michael Gazzaniga found that there were differences in the ways that the two hemispheres processed information. They were often looking at people who had had the connections between the two sides of the brain severed. So there was a tendency in the popular imagination to kind of enhance those differences and make them really fixed and rigid. Well, over time, it's become apparent that while the left and right brain do slightly different things, they cooperate together a whole lot to do things. What's been found in dyslexic individuals is they often use more cooperation between the two sides than other individuals. So as most people develop expertise and get faster with skills, they tend to rely more and more on narrow left-sided processing. So they tend to become more and more automatic about doing things. People with dyslexia often have difficulty becoming more automatic in that way. So they use more right brain skills, and that involves more top-down processing. So using a consideration of the big picture and the essence and the simple meaning behind things in order to compensate for some problems with doing things automatically and without thinking. And we find that that need to focus on what you're doing actually seems to lead to creative solutions more often. So we see people with dyslexia and ADHD coming up with innovative solutions to problems that they can't simply learn easily by rote.
Well, I have to tell you, this is my personal story, being diagnosed with dyslexia and having all the experts around in high school and struggling. I was fortunate enough to go to school on a swimming scholarship, because had I not done that, I'm not so sure I would have gotten to college. But once I got there, I had a secret swim, and I found myself in a sociology, a sport class my freshman year, and overwhelmed with the reading, along with several other classes. And it was sink or swim, and it was funny because I'm like, I can't read fast enough to keep up with this. And as a result of that, I kind of got to where, well, all right, I succumbed to, like, I can't read the whole paragraph. So I just started reading the first sentence, and I pared it down to I just read the first line of each paragraph, and I would go through, and I wouldn't be reading so much the words. I'd just be reading. I'd just kind of follow the gist of what was kind of going on, and I would go to class and take the notes, copious notes, I might add, and sit down, and I would just have a feel for it. And the night before, I would just kind of study to remember the buzzwords before I was supposed to kind of go in and take the test. And I was able to get by at B+, A minus in many of those classes. And it was funny because I ended up graduating with a public affairs major out of Indiana, which was actually a relatively reading intensive major for somebody who only read the first line of each paragraph. So when I was reading the book, I was like, wow, it just, because I wasn't reading the details, I was reading kind of the gist of what's going on and reading kind of what was under the message to kind of follow it. So I found that part of the book absolutely fascinating. I want to come back and kind of get into a little bit more details. Before we do, just a reminder to everybody, if you'd like to learn more about the couple or their book, go to dyslexicadvantage.com, and with that, we'll be right back.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
ADHD, is it real? How is it diagnosed? How do I know if I have it or if my children have it? Do you outgrow it? You have questions and we have answers. We're CHAD, a national organization made up of professionals, parents, educators, and, of course, those with ADHD. So if you want real answers to your questions, join CHAD at www.chadd.org or call us at 800-233-4050.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
I'm Jeff Copper, host of Attention Talk Radio, here to talk to you about CopyTalk.com, a voice dictation service. This is not just some voice dictation software. It's a real dictation service by people who type whatever you want. When I need to document something, all I do is hit speed dial on my cell or work phone and start speaking. The folks at CopyTalk will type it up and email it back to me that day. The best part is I can dictate as many 4-minute messages as I want, all for one flat monthly fee. Go to copytalk.com/ATR, enter Jeff Copper as the referrer's name, and sign up for the free trial account today. If you tell them I sent you, then you'll get $20 off the monthly subscription for as long as you keep the service.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
This is your ADHD information station. Attention Talk Radio. You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We've got the authors of The Dyslexic Advantage in our house. That'd be Brock Eide and Fernette Eide. Before the break, we were just talking about the inspiration for the show, the inspiration for the book, and really kind of laying out how they went about showing the two sides of a coin for each thing that went through. Moving forward, you guys use the word MIND, M-I-N-D, as kind of an acronym, and you break it down into four components, M-strength, I-strength, N-strength, and D-strength. Can you talk to us a little bit about those?
Yeah, very briefly, M-strength is very much like what people think of as spatial reasoning. So it's the ability to reason about physical and spatial qualities in the universe. So people that are very strong in M-strengths will often be things like engineers or architects, builders, people that are good mechanics, people that that like to work in various areas of art or design. I-strength stands for interconnected reasoning, and that's the ability to see connections between things, connections like analogies, similarities, likenesses, or causal relationships or correlations. The ability to put together different perspectives, so to look at a phenomenon from, say, a psychological perspective and an economic perspective and a political perspective all at once, and then form a large, big-picture view of that. And interconnection also includes gist and sort of top-down processing, the ability to spot the essence of a complex thing. So we'll often hear from executives and things, you know, in the middle of this complex situation, I'm the person who can just really see the simple key fact at the core of all this confusing bunch of information. So those are the I strengths.
Uh-huh.
N-strength stands for narrative reasoning. And by narrative, we really mean the ability to think and to store knowledge as stories, cases, and examples, usually formed in the mind out of bits of personal experience from the past that have then been recombined to store memories. And that kind of narrative memory stands in opposition to abstract factual memory, or the ability to remember facts that are stripped from context. So just things like, Paris is the capital of France. If you think that, know that as a fact, that's semantic or impersonal memory. If you think of that and you think about actually when you were in Paris, or you have a picture in your mind of the Eiffel Tower, or you hear, you know, French accordion music and you're sitting on a cafe by the Seine, that's personal memory and narrative memory. And D-strength, or dynamic reasoning, is the ability to use that kind of memory, those little bits of memory, to make predictions or simulations about the future or the past or possible scenarios. And that gives you the ability to predict. It gives you the ability to act and make decisions and come up with possibilities in situations where you only have part of the facts or where the facts are changing very quickly. So high D-strength people are often things like, you know, entrepreneurs, financiers, people that are working on construction projects with unstable conditions or excavations, people who do exploration, people that are farmers that can't count on the weather being exactly the same way all the time. Those are high D-strength type people.
The as you describe this, and we talk about the left side, right side, but the big picture part of dyslexia. I can kind of see, as you describe, like the inner strength, the more physical and spatial, being able to see. And you correct me if my language is right. It's almost like you can see in 3Ds, and you can see it from different angles, from a bigger perspective, and then the interconnecting, like beginning to see patterns. To connect, like, you know, one thing from here or different analogies or metaphors to see how they kind of fit. And again, and the narrative reason, I think if I remember that those chapters correctly, sometimes people actually struggle with the language, but the actual content of what they're doing is actually really good. And then at the end, using the memory and simulating the predictions and looking at it from different pieces of view to say which makes the most sense, really kind of struck me that was interesting, because in myself, I can really kind of see that. Did I accurately depict that high level side is what each one of these things have in common, at least on the advantage side?
Yeah, we think that that's really true. And I think, you know, looking at this, the underlying commonality that connects all of these is a strength in looking at very complex connections of lots of data of different types. And it's interesting because in recent years, researchers, and particularly Dr. Manuel Casanova at the University of Kentucky, along with some colleagues at the National Institutes of Health, have actually isolated and located differences in the brains of individuals with dyslexia, and also with many individuals with ADHD, by the way, that actually seem to predispose to forming these large conceptual matrices, these large ways of connecting different kinds of information and ways of thinking. And very interestingly, there seems to be an actual physical trade-off in the brain between the ability to do that and the ability to process a lot of very fine details, like the very fine details between closely related sounds or between very closely spaced visual objects, like the letters in a word that's printed in small type, or like very closely connected sequences of time. And that trade-off seems to be present in a very high number of dyslexics. But the focus has always been on the downside of some of those fine detail processing issues, and the benefits that come from that big picture processing have really been neglected and ignored. And that's the imbalance that we really wanted to set right.
Well, it's interesting. I'm gonna jump to the eye strength for a second, because that particular thing really kind of hit me, because as a coach with those with ADHD, I use a lot of metaphors, analogies, stories, and stuff. And the idea really is to try to help those that are stuck pay attention to these differences. As I describe, I can't change anybody, but your behavior can change if you pay attention to it differently. And the tools that you'd use to help people pay attention to things differently are metaphors, analogies, by looking, or mental models to look at it kind of a different way. And it's interesting because at the beginning of the show, I'm the host, but I'm an attention coach, because it took me a long time to get my arms around coaching and really to understand the essence of it, of what it really was, at least in my opinion. And I boiled it all down to, it's really about attention. It's about if you're stuck, how can I facilitate the shifting of your attention? I can't tell you to pay attention to something differently. You have to discover it on its own. And it wasn't until I got to that I could actually, it all made some sense, and I could think, I didn't have to remember the details, because I fundamentally, there's this big picture, the gist of what's kind of going on, and then all of a sudden everything kind of clicked. And it was fascinating to me. But on the other side, if I remember that chapter correctly, one of the downsides is being able to articulate complicated concepts.
Yes.
Which I can so identify with.
Well, and it's also, Jeff, it's very development linked, so that at younger ages, when kids have very narrow working memory spans, and this is a very big problem for kids with dyslexia and for kids with many kids with ADHD, the narrow working memory span just does not let you process those many possibilities that you have that your mind needs to sort through. So if you have a brain that's really good at seeing multiple connections, but you don't have the capacity to work through all of them in rapid time, then sequence them and organize them and put them into speech, you're going to look very inarticulate. You may look, you know, more concrete or rigid than other people. You may look like you're not creative and you don't have much to say. But as you grow and that working memory expands, and you can really take advantage of that program that allows you to see all these possibilities, suddenly that creativity blooms. And that's why we really say that kids with dyslexia and ADHD are built to be late-blooming kids, and it's critical that we not make assessments of them that put them in boxes at early ages, because the same kids that are struggling to get out their thoughts when they're 5 or 6 may grow up to be poets and writers and attorneys and people that are coaches and ministers and people that are just giving information in very powerful ways to people because they can tell these stories and see these analogies and metaphors, just like you're talking about.
And often with applications in a lot of different ways. What's so paralyzing when you're young, you see all the possibilities, and then you've got like 15 minutes to get it out on paper. That's what the split is. Actually, there's so much there, and that's why I think it's so frustrating to kids. But later on, once you see it, they can actually go and change disciplines, for instance, because they can see all the possibilities where their ideas can apply.
Well, it's interesting because part of the book, and not to make this too personal, but part of the book really kind of struck me because it talked about as your experiences kind of develop, because that's where the memory is, school actually gets easier as you get further into it, like the higher levels, because of some of the background. If I read it correctly, and I can tell you from my own experience, high school was horrific for me. I was an athlete to get me to college. I got through college, worked for a while, but when I went back to get my MBA, I mean, I basically had to drop out of accounting when I was in college because I just couldn't do it. I had to do something else. Yet I got my MBA and I got my concentration in finance, and I had to go through all the accounting courses to do it. It was a completely different ballgame. Not only did I get through it, but I had like a 3.85 GPA, mostly because there was a class that I took, organizational behavior, which is easy. I got like a B in it on purpose because I didn't even try for the A. And it was interesting because as time goes on, you get some of those more experiences in your back, it's easier to remember that stuff, which is just, again, that's another part of that book. It's like, wow, this really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and brain development, too, what we've learned about when the brain's cortex matures, the frontal lobes, where a lot of the attentional infrastructure lies, don't mature till age 25, and the language cortex, where a lot of the retrieval and storage of verbally stored facts takes place, doesn't mature till age 30. So we very commonly see people with just your experience. You go back to school after having trouble earlier at age 25 or 30, and suddenly everything clicks and you're on your way.
Yeah, you're like, this is easy. I tell you what, we need to go to another break. When we come back, I want to kind of just take each one of these and talk about the both sides of the coin to give everybody a little bit of a picture of that, and then talk about how it intersects a little bit with ADD, whether you just have ADD or the both of them. But again, for our listeners out there, if you want to learn more about the IDs or buy their book or just go online and check out their blog, go to dyslexicadvantage.com. With that, we'll be right back after this message.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention@attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're with the IDs, the authors of The Dyslexic Advantage. This has been a fascinating conversation. Can you guys go through each strength, the M strength, I strength, N strength, and D strength, and talk about both sides of the coin? Here are areas where we see there to be advantages, and here are the areas that are the challenges. Again, not right or wrong, just two sides of the same coin.
For the material reasoning, the M strength, again, the strengths there are spatial reasoning ability. So that includes things like being able to form a mental three-dimensional simulation of some physical object or some, you know, place or path of motion in space, and then to be able to manipulate that in an important way. So walking through a house in your mind, for example, if you're a builder or an architect. The downside that we see a lot of times that goes with that kind of spatial ability, there's really a couple. One is the same way that you can flip a design for a house in your mind when you're 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 years old sitting in class trying to write your B's and D's, you also have difficulty keeping them distinguished in your mind. So you may have problems with reversals. And often for the extremely spatially talented kids that we see that can really do great stuff with building and navigation, they'll often make especially exotic kinds of reversals. So a B will turn into a Q, for example, or a D into a G. And that kind of persistence of reversals is more common in the dyslexic kids we see. In the book, we talk about the fact that there's two mistakes that people often make in thinking about reversals. One is to think that reversals always mean dyslexia. And the second mistake is to think that reversals are not more common in some kids with dyslexia. And it's definitely true that there are some kids that show much more persistence with letters. We wrote about one gentleman who's a member of the National Academy of Sciences who's made amazing contributions in areas like genetics and protein folding, and he still has problems keeping his B's and D's separated. So he writes everything in capital letters, even, you know, though he's 50 or 60 years old now. So that's one problem, keeping your reversals from up in your writing. A second is language retrieval. There's actually some very interesting information, some research that has not gotten nearly as much play as it deserves, that shows that there's a connection between people with extremely high spatial ability in some cases and then problems with language storage and retrieval. So people like Einstein actually show a physical difference in their brain where the brain actually appears to have borrowed brain matter from parts of the brain that are usually used to process word sounds and is more heavily connected, that part of the cortex, with the part of the brain that processes spatial and visual information. So we'll see kids that are extremely talented in the spatial forms of math, in building, in design, who also have really kind of outsized problems with language retrieval and specific word information storage. And those often go together as a flip side package.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Einstein didn't start talking until he was 3, right?
Yeah, he was a very late talker, and he had problems actually talking back and forth in a productive way much, much later even than that. So he was a very late, showed very late acquisition of functional language.
So, again, on the M strength, the plus side is the mental imagery to be able to see something in a big perspective and actually move it around and run some simulations and stuff. But the downside is because you can move things around so visually, you might reverse symbols and stuff like that, and language retrieval becomes difficult, right?
Yeah, 2D, 3D is often kind of another way to think about the issues. Where children are able to flip in three dimensions, they may have trouble when they have to actually work where a B and a D are the same letter in three dimensions but not in two.
And this comes out in interesting ways, even on two-dimensional skills like the block design tests on the IQ tests, where kids with dyslexia actually as a group do not score better than non-dyslexics on that test, which is often thought to represent spatial ability. But in three-dimensional tests, recognizing impossible figures, for example, or navigating your way through a virtual environment in a computer-generated virtual world, dyslexic individuals show significantly better three-dimensional real-world spatial ability.
So they can make amazing computer game designers.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
We have a whole long list of those folks.
Go ahead.
Yeah, including explorers.
How about eye strengths? What are some of what's the positive side of that coin and the more challenging side of that coin?
People with strong eye strengths, again, are very good with analogies, often with problem solving, often with spotting connections between things, and they make great domain shifters. They're great at working in interdisciplinary areas. So spotting ways to combine fields that nobody has seen as connected before, or being able to use a technique that they've learned in one job or one discipline and apply it to a new area where people haven't seen that before. We talk in the book about people, for example, like James Lovelock, who came up with the Gaia hypothesis. He started out as a physiologist and then studied biophysics, and he essentially combined the perspectives that he learned from both of those to come up with this idea that the environment functions almost like a kind of organism that has a physiology, that that there's a flow in the way that the chemical components of the atmosphere change and interact with the oceans and the atmosphere around the Earth, that result in a kind of homeostatic stability that's very much like what happens with the body. And that's a great example of interconnected reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
The downside of having a mind that sees everything connected like that is that it can cause real problems with overload, with just information management, especially when you're younger. It also causes problems because frequently people with this thinking style make these conceptual leaps. Their mind doesn't move directly along linear deductive chains nearly as often as other people, and so often their mind will jump from one topic to an analogous topic or make a reference that other people just can't follow, and that causes some difficulty. There are often verbal confusions where people with this style will pull closely related or symbolically related words that are not quite the word that they're looking for. So keeping those words in separate categories can be tough. And we had a little boy that we wrote about in the book that used to do this all the time. He'd say, being dizzy really affects my carnation instead of my coordination, or those are optical delusions, and that kind of confusion and pulling out the wrong word is more common in people with a highly interconnected style. And sometimes they'll overlook the most obvious fact for the rarer fact.
In reading the book, earlier in the show, I kind of talked about that because you talk about the verbal confusion and the verbalizing, but that really kind of goes in. It's very difficult for them to articulate complicated concepts.
Especially when younger. When they get older, they tend to grow in to the complexity of their brain. So it's basically what we're dealing with when we're dealing with these kids, Jeff, is we're dealing with kids whose minds are trying to run a very complex program, but the hardware is not yet strong enough to run that program. But their mind is getting upgrades every year, and eventually, if they get enough time, if people maintain confidence in them, if they get enough support, most of them will grow into the ability to run those programs and function well. It's just when kids get off track by losing confidence and people lose confidence in them, they're just not prepared to take advantage of those strengths when they finally grow into them.
Well, yeah, if you have symbol reversal and you're having a hard time putting that stuff together, so people read the written language that they have and they go, well, this you can't spell, there's no grammar that's here, and you're having a hard time, I can't necessarily follow you in the academic world. That's kind of an issue. But on the other side of it, what I'm hearing is three-dimensionally, they can see things that aren't happening. They can make some connections going on. So they've got these brilliant minds to a certain extent, but they have the hardest time articulate so everybody else knows what they're talking about.
Jeff, you're sort of breaking up on our phone. We're having a hard time hearing you.
Here, let me try this. But what I'm hearing is so far what's kind of cool is that they see the world in a different way, but because of the symbol reversal and language retrieval type stuff, it's hard for them to articulate and let everybody else know what's really kind of going on in their head.
I'm sorry, it's still breaking up, and we can't make out what you're saying at this point.
Hang on a second. Let's try this. Is that better?
Not yet.
I tell you what, can you pick up a headset? You're still on speaker, right?
Okay, I've got the handset now. Do you hear
better?
Me well?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly well.
I'm just getting little packets of sound.
Huh. I tell you what, because it's clear as a bell on our end. Hang on a second. Let me just do something here real quick. Turn up the volume. It's coming through over the internet. Tell you what, I'm going to pause for a second. I can go to break. You want to try to dial back in and see if the connection changes?
I'm not able to follow what you're asking.
Everybody, if you'll hold on for a second, let me try something here. Everybody, we're having some technical difficulties. They're going to call right back in, so we're going to run to a commercial break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio.
We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention@attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. Hopefully we got our technical difficulty solved. Brock, can you hear us?
Yes, very well now.
Mm-hmm. Excellent, okay. So we were covering the positives and the negatives of the M-strength and I-strength. Let's tackle N-strength now.
So for the narrative reasoning ability, the big benefit of narrative reasoning is that you tend to see things well as stories, as cases, and examples. And where that comes in very useful is in giving people the full human dimension of particular messages you're trying to get across. So when people are trying to communicate, for example, as an attorney convincing a jury about a case or a judge about a case, they can tell stories and draw implications about the real world implications of what they're talking about. It's not divorced from reality. For people that want to work in therapeutic disciplines, often the really good storytellers have tremendous empathy for people, and it helps them to see the implications of how the things that they're thinking about will impact on people's lives. So that storytelling ability is used in all sorts of situations. For people with businesses, thinking about how customers will use things and thinking about how people will respond to things, that's a very important use of N strengths. The difficulty with a mind that's really programmed to think entirely with stories often comes up in school, where kids may be good about remembering what they've done personally, but they're very weak at remembering facts that have been divorced from experience. So the times table, how to spell words, facts that they've been given to memorize, like a list of state capitals.
We often have parents talk about their kids
as being elephants with poor memories. So, you know, the kid that can remember everything that they did on vacation or the name of all
their friends' pets, but they can't remember the facts that they're taught in class.
And that kind of a trade-off is classic for N strengths.
And Brock, you guys were kind of fading out there a little bit. So for everybody, the memory of those with dyslexia is that it's more experiential, so it's not rote facts. So the idea is that when you're in school and you got to remember your times tables or you got to remember that stuff, it becomes very, very difficult. You really need to be in the experience to really kind of be able to retrieve that memory, and it can be kind of challenging for N-strength people. It was fascinating because in reading the book, they talk about people that were – they have such language and symbol problems, yet they became writers later in life. And it was funny, I was at the CHAD conference in Orlando, and Ned Hollowell was talking. He was talking about, you know, I'm dyslexic and I got ADD. Who would have figured I would be in a business that requires me to write so much? He developed over a period of time the symbolism side, but he's really good at telling stories. So fascinating. So let's move on to D-strengths. What's the pluses and minuses of that?
So D strengths give you the ability to function in environments where things are changing very quickly or where you don't have all the information, but you still need to make a decision. So people that are entrepreneurs, people that are chefs working, you know, when you don't know who's going to come in and order what, people that are working, you know, in areas like geology where there's all these forces at work and predicting, you know, where to build a road, for example. Those are all areas where the D strengths, this ability to simulate and predict, come in really handy. The downside of D strength is that we typically see people that excel in this ability to predict solve problems using a mechanism called insight. So rather than using deductive logic where they're following rules and going step by step, they go through a process where they have to collect facts, But then they just need to relax and let their mind wander and think about those facts and let the answer sort of come to them. Now, that's a real problem when you're in second grade and you've been given a mad math minute and you're supposed to just retrieve things by rote. If you're waiting for good things to happen and looking out the window, you know, you're called somebody with inattention. But a lot of very creative people think this way. That's why the classic, you know, sort of eureka call from Archimedes when he was in the bathtub trying to figure out problems is so representative of his problem-solving style. Many of these ideas come when you're driving in the car, taking a shower, lying in bed, waking up or going to sleep at night. It needs to have some time to germinate and the connections is to be made rather than something you can intentionally drive through a series of rules.
I love how you brought up insight, because I'm a huge fan of, or I've been trying to understand that and boil it down to its most simple form. And I'm give you a couple. In my business, did coaching. I actually have a newsletter, and twice a month I have a little newsletter that goes out in the bottom. It's called a what? What's obvious is a function of what you pay attention to. And I always try to do something fun to illustrate that. And most recently, I've been like just playing around with just asking people questions and having them notice what they're going to come up with the answer is, and if you read the question, then I'm going to answer it in a different way that's completely different. Like, how many seconds are there in a year? A person methodically would just kind of go through, okay, there's, you know, they start adding up. You can start to see the math that happened, and I go, well, the answer is 12. And I go, what? Well, yeah, January 2nd, February 2nd, March the 2nd. And that insight, is insightful thinking is you pay attention to it one way, then you pay attention to it a different way, and you keep doing that until all of a sudden it makes some sense, and you land on, oh, well, that's it. Just like another example, what 2 days start with the letter T? Most people would say methodically Tuesday and Thursday. That would be a good answer, but how about today and tomorrow? Again, when you look at that, all of a sudden you're saying, for the dyslexic person who's like, wait a second, you have the ability to see things and make connections in different ways outside of necessarily the norm. And the way I ask the question, they're both actually right answers, both sides of it, but you're looking at it really kind of differently. And I really identify with that stuff, because it's funny, because at the end of the day, when I was in college, going back to my little sociology class, I had to do a research paper. I'm like, oh my God, I'm freaking out, and all of a sudden it dawns on me, you know, if I interview somebody, I can quote them and footnote it.
Yeah.
And that's how I did my research page, which, by the way, this whole radio show got started because I didn't want to write a book or a blog, so I started an audio podcast, and it turned into this because that's how I did it, because it's a lot easier. And it's fascinating because insight does take, it's not methodical, it's not like you lay an egg. Sometimes you have to kind of kick back and kind of let your mind daydream to come up with some of these connections. But I tell you, I watch, there's a history special on Einstein, and it greatly depicts how he's driving away on a bus looking at a clock, and he daydreams, and also starts to realize as you approach the speed of light, the light doesn't catch up to you, so the clock seems to freeze in time, and all of a sudden he has that aha, that insight, that as you approach the speed of light, time slows. But
well, it's very interesting, Jeff, but the scientists who study this, and particularly Mark Beeman at Northwestern University, have actually found that the state that the mind goes into when solving problems by insight is really indistinguishable from relaxation, from mind wandering, and just from mentally sort of just kicking back and putting your mental feet up on the table.
Unfocused.
It's
yeah.
Very unfocused, and you have to let the mind wander to really use your imagination. It's not a really heavily active process. The initial collection of data is very active, so you can't be lazy that way. But once it's time to solve the problem, you have to relax and kick back.
I've run way over and extended this stuff a little bit, and all of our listeners out there, some of you I've lost you because the show kicked off at 45 minutes and we're kind of keep going, so hopefully you've come back to listen to the end of the show in archives. I do only have a couple more minutes. Can you guys speak a little bit to the overlap here on dyslexia and ADHD in this space?
Yeah, you know, there's an enormous overlap. I mean, published studies looking at them suggested about, you know, it's about 40% each way of overlap. But in clinical practice, rather than in research studies, we see very commonly that there are kids diagnosed with ADHD that are also dyslexic, but very often they have high verbal skills and they're able to use their top-down reasoning ability that we've been talking about to comprehend what they read fairly well, but they still have problems reading at the individual word level. So a lot of those kids will show problems with some of the classic things with ADHD, so working memory issues, timing, sequencing, but they'll also have undetected dyslexic issues as well. What we've been talking about the big picture versus fine detail trade-off, the researchers that have looked at that have found that to be very true of ADHD as well. Working memory challenges, very commonly seen in both individuals with dyslexia and individuals diagnosed with ADHD. Problems with procedural learning, so learning how skills, things that involve steps to do a process or a project, very common in both dyslexia and ADHD. So there's a huge overlap between the kinds of things that will get you diagnosed with ADHD and the kinds of things that will get you diagnosed with dyslexia. And I think over time, what we're going to find is that there really is a continuum connecting these conditions and the underlying brain features that lead you to getting diagnosed with either. And that even at the extremes where you don't see, you know, this dyslexic person I wouldn't diagnose with ADHD, and that person with ADHD I wouldn't diagnose with dyslexia, still in many ways you see that their brain features are similar and that they look like neurological cousins to each other. So there's no second and third cousins between dyslexic people and people diagnosed with ADHD. They're in the family, and I think that the more people in both communities recognize the similarities in thinking styles and especially a lot of the positive features, it's really going to be better for everybody.
Well, I'm going to come back to the positive features real quick, but it's interesting because I'll tell you, there's so many people that come to me for coaching, and they have such a big picture. They'll say, blah, 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 like, you know, I need to go, you know, find some clients. But they're stuck at such a high level that I'll actually say, well, what does that actually look like? Which is a coaching question to kind of help them actually kind of help bring them down into some of the details so that they actually can put those pieces together and really kind of put that puzzle together because they have a hard time kind of coming down. On the other side of it, one thing I like about being dyslexic and working with those with ADHD is sometimes they'll come and they're so caught up in the weeds, and I'm like, I don't need the details. Just tell me a bunch of incidents where this took place and start to look for commonalities. So, for example, one of the things that I'll do is they'll call me up and they'll say, I want coaching on organization and time management. I say, that's great. I tell you what, next week when you call me, I'm going to ask you what you want coaching on. You say that. So, all right. A week later goes by, they call me up, our appointment's at 1 o'clock, they call it 1:02, it means relatively close, and I say, what do you want coaching on? Time management organization. Wow, that's incredible, look at how much progress you've made. And they're like, what? I go, yeah, you've made some incredible, look, you made this on time, how are you able to remember it? And it's funny because they're like, what? I'm going, what, if you made this on time, you did something right. And they're so stuck in the weeds, they can't really see the patterns of what they've done. So I start asking them some questions and realize everybody's organized in one shape or form or another. They're just not aware of it because they're so close to it. And it's really kind of fascinating because they kind of come on both sides, and there's a lot of people with ADHD that have this high-level type stuff. You just need to help them kind of bring them down into the details so they can execute it. Whereas on the other side, I like the dyslexic side of me, is if they're in the weeds, just give me a whole bunch of examples because I'm trying to find the connections to find the commonalities of it and mirror it back to them. The other thing you said a second ago, actually I lost my train of thought. You said the big picture. I said something a second ago, I was going to come back to it. You remember what it was? I'm sorry. I got off on my little rant there.
Some of those trade-offs between big picture and fine detail issues. Was that it?
It lost me. So anyway, the bottom. Oh, I remember what I liked about what you guys did with this book is you took each, you dissected each area, and we went through them. And here's a side that is more challenging, but here's the other side that's there. And with those with ADHD, if they look at ADHD that way and you start to focus on the positive side as opposed to just dwelling on the negative side, then I really think that you can actually put it together. And this book that you guys wrote was great. It was great for me just to look at it because, like, oh, okay, this really makes a lot of sense. You know what this side is, but you also know what the other side is, because the idea is you really want to develop the positive side and minimize the negative side, which is a great strategy to move forward.
Yes, absolutely.
Is there anything in the book that you guys wrote that we haven't covered tonight that you think would be important for our listeners to know before we wrap things up?
Just in the latter third of the book, it's a lot of practical strategies for dealing with some of the challenge side that comes with dyslexia, but also for thinking about ways to mine your talents. So we do a lot of practical discussion in the book, and not just sort of theoretical level discussions.
That's right. They do that at the end. They literally get down on reading and writing and say, here's some things that you can do that. So, again, everybody, if you want to learn more, if you want to get the book, go to dyslexicadvantage.com. With that, thank you guys very much for coming on the show. This has been great.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
it's
wonderful.
It's been wonderful for us, too.
We might have to have a sequel some point down the road. So, anyway, thanks again, everybody. And for our listeners out there, stay tuned for the next edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.